Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
This will be fun.
There we go.
I want to talk about Polka Dot Man.
And killing kids is a red flag. How dare you call him ridiculous?
I would eat a bag of dicks for freedom.
Like, it's huge and it's still bizarre.
Hello and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, this is Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast and the band Subtastics. And I'm sick, so I apologize in advance if I cough a lot in the microphone.
And Fergal Amayo.
Whoa, what's up? This is Fergal Amayo saying, get your nerd on, y'all. Owner of Gotham Knight Comics and lover of all things nerd-like. So I say, let's get down to it. Let's bring Amanda Waller into this conversation. She's dope.
And our guest host this evening is Ankit Madeira.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ankit Madeira, and I'm an actor, a singer-songwriter, and I am also the host of Post Finale and the co-host of Flip the Scripts, which are also movie and adaptations podcasts.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us tonight. So our movie today is 2021's The Suicide Squad, starring Margot Robbie, Idris Elba, John Cena, directed by James Gunn.
You know the deal. Complete the mission, you get 10 years off your sentence. You fail to follow my orders in any way, and I detonate the explosive device in the base of your skull.
Love him or hate him, these are your brothers and sisters for the next few days.
Any questions?
Hand?
Yes, that is your hand. Very good.
We're all gonna die.
I hope so.
So before we jump into the movie, guys, this episode is gonna be coming out 3 days before the new Captain America movie is coming out. I just want to get your thoughts on that. Are you looking forward to seeing it? Are you gonna avoid it? Or have you seen the trailers?
Oh, I'm definitely seeing this movie. Now, it's not to say that they haven't done a gazillion reshoots, and right now there seems to be a resurgence in the DC universe. And I'm probably slightly more excited for the resurgence of the DC Universe, but that's only to say because Marvel is on the fly trying to rewrite the entire next set of sagas, and it's growing by the day. And I'm curious to see, because there are so many end credit scenes. Really, this movie is about what goes on after the movie. Then it's as much as about what's going on during the movie, because all this is supposed to be setting up Doomsday, Secret Wars, Battle World, all the really big movies with like hundreds of characters in there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how it sets up everything, like you were saying, Fergal, because I've been following the MCU since about 2010. I wasn't quite old enough to be allowed to watch Iron Man on my own when it came out in 2008. But yeah, I've been following it since about 2010, a couple years before the first Avengers came out. And I feel like we're back in that stage where we now gotta like reestablish what's happening, and I feel like they've lost that conjecture, so I feel like this movie might be able to do that.
I think you just made Fergal feel old, because I think he was there when the first Iron Man was written.
This is my son was born on that year, so yes, no, thank you for that. That's perfectly. I should go find my gerontology medicine, because that just literally sealed the deal. Young man, that's all I want to say. I don't even know how he got there, but thank you. This is good. I'm really excited.
Let's do this. I'm looking forward to this one, though.
You know, I'm excited for the Red Hulk because I like Hulk in all forms. Anything you can do to get more Hulk, I'm all for. I also like this, the new Captain America, the Falcon Captain America. I'm a big fan of him as well. So I'm hoping this movie kind of makes, if you weren't watching the show, which I liked Falcon Winter Soldier, whatever it was called. If you didn't watch that and you don't really have a connection to this new Captain America, maybe this will do it for you. So I'm excited. That said, there's no chance to see it in the theater because apparently the only things I see in the theater anymore are Sonic movies. So I'll see it eventually on TV.
Yeah, I thought you would be into the Red Hulk part of it. I'm hoping it's like a Captain America Winter Soldier style of movie. That's what it looks like, at least from the trailers. But we've been deceived by trailers before. I probably won't see it in the theater just because same reason. I don't go into theaters too much anymore. So I'll probably see it on Disney Plus 6 weeks after it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, same. The last thing I saw in theaters was Wicked. And the last thing before that was probably like Dune, because the theaters are just expensive.
Dune I did see in the theaters, but that was a special event. Our movie tonight, though, The Suicide Squad, you picked this one. Why'd you pick this version of it, if anything else?
So when we started talking, you gave me a list of a lot of films. And for any listeners that don't know who I am, I host a podcast where I'm an actor, but I haven't seen anything. And so when you and I were talking, Chris, I was like, hey, do I have to have seen the film? And you were like, no, sometimes it's fun if you haven't. So I randomly picked five films that I hadn't seen and been like, hey, I've heard decent things about all of these. And so that's kind of how I picked this one. And it was just part of that five because I had heard things about this film and I had never seen it. So,
well, were any of you familiar with the comic, The Suicide Squad, before actually seeing this movie?
Yes, I am always familiar with the comic. There is not many comics I am not familiar with. So, yeah, obviously, we'll get into the comic story, but the characters, Rick Flag, Rick Flag Sr., Rick Flag Jr., the different iterations, Task Force X, the Department of Extranormal Affairs, Argus. I mean, there is, like, you know, the one thing you can say about DC that is probably similar to Marvel is that the human beings within any organization, within a governmental organization, will always have different variations of their own little superhero teams. And so Amanda Waller is extremely powerful. If you get nothing else out of that movie, understand that. She's a very powerful woman who built these teams. And for some reason, this little lady, man, she just makes, you know, she gets people to work for her. That's her job. And so work against their best nature. But it's pretty, the premise is cool. That's all I'll tell you. And I think this one was funner. The first one took itself way too seriously. And this one took itself maybe just quite not seriously enough, but also fun.
Yeah, I was not familiar with the actual comic, but the concept, a team of supervillains that get recruited by the government to do a mission, pretty straightforward. So, I mean, I knew some of the characters, some of the main characters in this have been in other DC things I am familiar with, obviously Harley. The idea, you don't need to be in depth in the comics to come into this one and be fine off the get-go.
Yeah, I think that actually helps you not to be too familiar with these characters before coming to them. James Gunn has a habit of taking D-level characters and bringing them to the surface. I had not been familiar with the Suicide Squad. I had heard of them, but I was not too familiar with them because I know there was this whole, from the cartoon, you know, Amanda Waller and all the Suicide Squad stuff from that, but actually the comic book itself I was not too familiar with. So, guys, was this your first time seeing this movie, or it sounds like a lot of you saw this in the past when it came out?
No, actually, just like our guest, I had never seen this before. Most of these movies, to be fair, I'm that guy anyway. So in this case, I'm also that guy. I've not seen this before. I also had not seen the 2016 version of Suicide Squad, so...
Jeremy, you are that guy. I actually saw this in the theaters with my son. So this was a 2021 go-to after the pandemic. Remember, I was after the pandemic, and I had to start wearing deodorant again and come out and feast the world. So I figured, let's do something where they're oxygen other people, and I was vaccinated, so I felt good.
Yeah, I did not see it in theaters, though I did buy the Steelbook version of the moment it came out and watched it on that.
I watched it last night. It was cool.
Perfect timing.
We're on the same page. That's how I do it. In fact, I watched it this morning right before this taping.
Here we go.
So all Jeremy, you two are just being filled with just only hot takes, nothing else, no analysis, nothing.
Oh, I have the analysis, but also hot takes.
So Fergal, why don't you give us a little bit of background on who the Suicide Squad is?
Well, I mean, so it's an interesting story because, again, to properly tell the story, you got to go all the way back to the Snowy Dupes of 1959 when Ross Andrew came out with this and Robert Kanigher. Came out with this and created this in the Brave and the Bold issue 25. It was actually out of their mind. The characters that were in the first run are a lot of the characters you're seeing in the Superman movie, like Metamorpho, things of that nature, Robin, Aqualad, folks like that. That was the original Suicide Squad. And then Legends, which was the 1987 remake, really brought in Enchantress, the Flag story, Katana, Bane, all of Batman's characters, along with some additional characters like King Shark, who's got super popular, Bloodsport, Peacemaker, who's now got his own show, which is surprising on every level, Deadshot, Harley Quinn. Again, it's part of the DC Universe's ability to take criminals and use them, as she liked to say, and Amanda Waller is very fond of saying, we use Nazis to stop, use mobsters to stop Nazis in World War II. This is her version of that team, is the ability to go after criminals, complete deniability, blow their heads up, take 10 years off their incredibly long life sentences.
And now I had heard that DC actually, part of the reason they had the Suicide Squad, I could be wrong about this, was DC did this so they could off certain low-level characters they didn't want anymore.
Except for Weasel. I don't understand how Weasel seems to survive every iteration of the Suicide Squad, but he is in every iteration, including the cartoon version. So if they were offing off characters, they were doing an ass backwards.
Meaning the point of, through the canon of over the years of the Suicide Squad, not the movies, where they're like, you know what, we don't want these characters in our universe anymore. Let's get rid of them.
No, because DC is, right now, DC is probably more so than Marvel, has retconned their universe many, many times. So no one is ever truly dead in the DC universe. I mean, you can go back to Bloodsport, had some Soul comics. You can go back to Bronze Tiger. If you watch, there's a great DC movie that talks about Batman's, he's learning part of his martial arts training. And one of the guys he's up against, kind of a 70s theme movie, is Bronze Tiger. So they don't ever actually get rid of people, but they do cycle through. It allows them to introduce lesser known bad guys like Plastique. Plastique is a lesser known bad guy. You would not know that she generates plastic explosives, if I'm not mistaken. You probably would not know who Nightshade is. And I damn sure know Captain Boomerang wouldn't have too much of a career if it wasn't for the Suicide Squad. Because I believe The Flash had that guy wrapped up in about the first three pages of a comic book he came out in.
So why do we jump into things? If this is your first time joining us, just quick heads up. We're going to be discussing certain elements of this movie that might be considered spoilers. So consider yourself warned. I mean, the movie is only a few years old, so I'd recommend going out and seeing it and maybe coming back. But like I said, consider yourself warned. So why do you walk us through the plot of this movie? What actually happens?
Yeah, so my short summary of it, without giving away anything, because I don't want to give away too much. It's still a fairly recent movie. And so Amanda Waller gets together a group of supervillains to take on a task out on the island of Corto Maltese, where they have a very important mission to complete, and their goal is to survive the mission. And as we alluded to earlier, if they do, they get time taken off of their life sentence, and that's how we meet Bloodsport and the rest of the gang.
So this movie is a, how do I put this? It's just an ensemble cast. There are so many characters in this movie. Which are some of your favorite characters?
I really enjoyed Weasel. I know Fergal seemed annoyed with Weasel, but Weasel was just really funny. Weasel was pointless. And if Weasel had any more screen time than Weasel had, Weasel would have overstayed his welcome.
I think the Weasel should have got with the guy who could take his arms off. I think they should have had a whole scene where they were playing catch with the guy with the arms off. Because that would
have
been most...
the only other way that Weasel would have been okay in
that
this
would
film.
Have been perfect. I have no idea what his name is, but he's arm off boy to me. And I just thought, if you could have any superpower that you want to slap yourself with, that would be the one you'd want to slap yourself with. Because and wake up one morning, imagine all of you gentlemen just wake up one day and you realize your arms could move on their own, but they're not really strong.
Yeah, detachable arm kit. It's my favorite character in the in the movie.
I love the fact that he goes by the acronym for it, but he doesn't want to tell anyone what actually means, because the word kid is in there. He's like, he's outgrown the name, but that's who he is.
And funny enough, he has been retconned as Guy Gardner in Green Lantern, and he is the rookie police officer. So just keep it in mind. There's so many interesting things coming back at it, but. You got a lot of interesting characters. I don't know. There's so many, like Michael Rooker, Savant. He's actually a very far, he's had like one or two comics on his own in the Suicide Squad, kind of that process back in the 80s. Interesting character. I don't know. I thought Bloodsport was cool, but then when I looked at Bloodsport, I'm like, is it because Will Smith wasn't available for Bloodshot? Is it just wanted another blood?
So actually, it's funny you said it. So originally, Will Smith was not available for the filming of this movie, so they were going to bring Idris in to replace him as the actor, but not the character. And they said, then Will Smith's like, well, one day I might want to come back. So that's why they went with Bloodsport. So that way Will Smith can eventually come back as his original character from the first Suicide Squad.
Was that pre or post slap? I think that was pre-slap. Because he's got a long way to go. Oh, wait,
that's pre-slap.
That's pre-slap. Okay, so he's got a long way to go post-slap.
But it is funny, Bloodsport, when you just done was a blood spot. No, blood. Blood spot.
Even you get it confused. Yeah,
I get that one confused all the time. That was a terrible movie.
Deadshot and Bloodsport. That's who we're looking at. But I actually, no, you're right. Like, there's no excuse for the first Suicide Squad, but there was that Deadshot opening sequence. That was no money, no honey. And he just like, yeah, that was a cool scene, you know, to be able to shoot a bullet in every direction.
Oh, I was referring to the Vin Diesel movie.
Oh, careful. Let's never dog out Vin Diesel because you're looking at his cousin right here.
So one of my favorite characters actually was Amanda Waller. Viola Davis in that role was fantastic. She was just one mean lady.
She's been fantastic since she took the role on. She's been in many iterations of Amanda Waller throughout the entire show. And they like her so much, they've actually got a show called Waller coming out in development. So she's quite a popular character.
So one of the things that happened in this movie is there are effectively two Suicide Squads that are attacking this island at the same time. Which of those two Suicide Squads did you prefer as characters? Not success, of course.
The one that were Bullet Sponge? I thought the Bullet Sponge ones were fun, right? The Mongol's daughter, or I don't know, it was Mongol's sister.
Mongal.
Mongal. I thought that they were fun. Because that was a nod to real characters. They didn't change none of those characters. Like TDK is in the comics with the exact same gift that he has here. No blood coming off his arms, by the way. Just popping right out the joints and walking on their own.
Well, if you notice, they actually look like they're like action figure sockets.
Yeah. So they were sort of slightly... Like, he was attempting, like, he was really pushing them to walk forward. And so, again, you think about that. And I don't know who... I still can't remember his name because he was so unmemorable. The guy with the long spear. The spear was important. The spear had more... Javelin. The Javelin spear had more of a bigger role in that movie than Javelin did. But, you know, again, an interesting storyline for there. I thought the first team was great, Bullet Sponges. One of the SNL alums, who's the guy who died, who, like, called the court?
Oh, that's Pete Davidson.
Yes.
I wanted to point out, like, they just threw money at that scene. Because, like, this is the lineup that you got for some of them. You got Nathan Fillion as TDK. You have Flula Borg as Javelin. I like how they just name him Javelin. Pete Davidson is in his Blackguard. Sean Gunn is in his Weasel. Like, you got really big names in here. And I'm sure I'm missing a few, but those are the quick ones on IMDb. And it's just like, they just threw money at it.
Well, what's funny is I went back and looked at some of the trailers for this movie, and they highlight those characters as if Pete Davidson had a much larger role in this movie than he did.
I like that. I think it was intentionally done because at first, I mean, they even do the full intro. You get to see them fly in for their mission. It does all like the stuff like, oh, this is what we're going to watch. But I was like, I don't see Bloodsport. So I was like, I knew there's another character in this that I haven't seen. But everybody else was like, okay, this will be fun. And then just to have them all get wiped out kind of early on, most of them, is pretty great. Yeah. I mean, I loved that. And I like the misdirect.
Yes, that was an interest because they all got killed. And that is all. And actually, that was the intro into the intro. That wasn't even the intro to the movie. That was the intro to the intro, which I think that should have been the first intro to the intro because that's what the Suicide Squad is. It's Bullet Sponges, right? So, but yeah, I liked how they did the two separate teams. And then, you know, they really threw you off because they threw Rick Flagg in there as well. And they threw Harley Quinn in there. They threw Rick Flagg in there, which you knew were going to last, right? They were definitely not going anywhere, but they threw him in there.
I want to talk about Polka Dot Man, the most ridiculous of all the characters.
I love him.
No, he's not ridiculous.
How dare you call him ridiculous?
I can't agree with that.
He himself knew he was ridiculous. I'm not saying he wasn't good. That he was the most comic book accurate comic book character I think I've ever seen on screen.
Well, it's because he puked up polka dots because his mom didn't love him enough and subjected him to interdimensional crap at Star Labs. And now he's a conduit for radioactive bombing polka dots.
Well, maybe she loved him so much she wanted to make him a superhero and all his siblings.
He saw his mom in every person and everywhere. So I think even Giant Starro was his mom at one point. So.
I feel like he is quietly the strongest of all of them with his polka dots. And it's not talked about in the movie.
Well, at first it's talked about only like that's what he does. He throws polka dots, whatever. And then when you actually see it, you're like, holy crap, this is huge. Like his power is the most powerful than anybody else that's there. Like, both Bloodsport and Harley Quinn, basically just they have a lot of weapons. They're good with them, but they have weapons. They don't have like, they aren't causing nuclear explosions. This guy's basically just like shooting energy at things. I mean, towards the end,
if he just doesn't like something, he can blow it up and disintegrate it.
He's a great character.
Imagining what that virus does, it makes him vomit basically bombs, mm-hmm. and it allows him to throw them at people. The most disturbing scene, though, I think, was the nightclub where he's dancing with, what, 7 or 8 versions of his mother?
Oh, that was perfect. Yeah, that whole scenario set up the ridiculousness of the Suicide Squad, right? I mean, because he wasn't the only comic actor. The Stinker was comically, for the most part, was comically accurate in this as well. Starro was definitely comically accurate. There's no mistaking that. Like, the take on, and I mean, it's interesting. They also threw a quick nod into some Norse mythology with Jotun. They threw a little bit of backstory, and I'm sure, Chris, you're going to give us a very detailed exposition upon the building where they took Starro, because that is a Nazi-era building that was funded. And obviously, if you go back and do a little research on Corto Maltese, that is not the first time that has been mentioned in a movie.
I've also enjoyed King Shark with Sylvester Stallone.
Nimue. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was, as soon as you realize it's Sylvester Stallone, all the potential casting questions are out the window. Because in every movie we've ever done, it seems like Sylvester Stallone could have been in a movie and never is. He is in this movie.
This time he's there. This and Judge Dredd. We got him for that.
Oh, let's never talk bad of Judge Dredd.
So we sort of touched around a bit. How did Idris Elba do as effectively the lead of this movie?
Better than Will Smith. Better than Will Smith. If you're talking about being absurd, outrageous, but if you're trying to lead a bunch of cats who have asses where their faces should be, he did extremely well.
Yeah, I was glad he was the leader of this group, because I thought going into this, not knowing a lot about the Suicide Squad and not watching the previous, that it was going to be Harley Quinn leading this team. And I don't think that she's a good leader character. I mean, I don't think she's supposed to be, but I think as a leader, I think it's like that would be hard to follow and hard to believe. So I like that it's more that things are happening. She's there, but she's not the focus of this movie like I thought she was.
Yeah, I liked him in the role. I enjoyed it. I normally haven't seen him in something like where he's this cartoonish and outlandish, so it was really fun. But also, I kind of put together that he was the leader because he was in the top center of the poster. I was like, all right, I feel like this guy's... You got Idris Elba. He's probably going to be the main person in this movie. He's right there. And so, yeah, I wasn't surprised when we found out he was the leader.
I do like that when they're assembling the team, Waller says to him, "We've assembled your team, but everyone has their own unique set of skills." And the first person she introduces them to is Peacemaker and describes his set of skills exactly how she described his set of skills. He can kill you with anything and has been taught since his father taught him since he was a child.
I do it better.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Does anyone else feel like Bloodsport had way too many weapons built into that uniform? Like, wasn't that uniform in and of itself just a little, like, almost an interdimensional pathway to extraordinarily, amazingly difficult weapons?
Especially by the end of it, where he's, like, whipping things off, and at some point he runs out of weapons.
Yeah, I mean, he does run out, but, I mean, he is literally, what is that, the Guyver? Was he in a Guyver suit? Because I was just kind of figuring this whole thing out, like, because... You know, one little thing turned into a big-ass thing that could harm a giant starfish. I'm just curious to know where that came from.
I thought that was funny. He basically was like Legos, the gun. Just kept attaching new parts, making it bigger and bigger and bigger.
But it wasn't just that they, like, it wasn't like he attached a scope or did anything else. Like, it was like it morphed into other parts of the gun. That was the only part of it that I was kind of like, for his weapons, where I was like, come on now. But when he just pulled 1,000 things out like Batman would, I was fine with that. Because they were all... individual things that could have theoretically been stuck in there, but that one gun is like, what?
Yeah, it's like Batman saying, okay guys, hold on a sec, and pulling a Batmobile out and turning a couple keys and dropping it on the ground. I mean, like, okay, there's my Batmobile. Don't worry about the fifth and fourth dimensional flip-flops here. We're just going to keep it all together.
Now, having seen Peacemaker in this movie, John Cena's character, how do you feel the fact that a TV series spun out of this?
It was the bag of dicks on the beach comment that got him a show. I think that was kind of ad-libbed. I think the bag of dicks comment, I would eat a bag of dicks for freedom. I think that's what got him a show. I think, honestly, that's what, when he was walking around in his tidy whities and was like, I would eat dicks for freedom. That's what got him a show. I mean, I think James Gunn was like, we want that guy.
Well, the line that was ad-libbed was when he talks about his tidy whities, he goes, why you gotta be why are you racist about it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the bag of dicks was written by Gunn himself.
And I think that just the execution of the bag of dicks comment was the one that I think got that John Cena his show. And I think there's just, his helmets are so outrageous. I mean, I've actually got the first issue of Peacemaker, which is a Canadian book. So it's a very old 12-cent book, it's a really interesting book, but nothing like the character represented on this show. Nothing like that in the background. Dad isn't a complete, you know, whatever he is. It's just a, but he is in love with freedom. Like, I will tell you, Peacemaker is in love with freedom to the point that he will mass murder everyone to get freedom.
I do think that out of any of the characters, he does probably pose one of the most interesting backstories and, like, psyches to then follow in a TV show. So I do feel like if it's written well, it could be a very good TV show. So I see the potential. So I see why this is the character that they picked.
If you haven't seen the show yet, I do recommend going to see it. It is basically just a lot of Peacemaker.
Mm, okay.
And he's coming. He has a second season coming out this year.
Oh.
He does. It's actually, so I will tell you this. It's an interesting show. It does dive in. And here's what's most interesting about the show. And I will say this to you right now. It's an interesting show. What was unique about it is that James Gunn did not throw away canon in that show. Right? Creature Commandos is a direct result of Suicide Squad and Peacemaker to give us Creature Commandos. That is, I mean, if there's anything about, like, and I'm always respectful of anyone who does this. I think the Russo brothers do this. I think Nolan does this. You know, the guy does Tenet and other things like that. I think there's some characters or directors who understand nuance. And I think Gunn is one of those guys. Like, he drew all of the small pieces that came out of all those shows to give us Creature Commandos, which I think is one of the best shows on TV today.
I'll have to check it out.
So why don't we jump in? We've sort of hinted at some things that have happened with these characters, but what are some of the scenes that stood out to you?
I love when they first, so after the second group, you know, gets to the island, and you see there, that's who you're actually going to follow, right? Bloodsport and King Shark and those guys. And they get the second mission where it's like, go save Flag. Yeah, go save Flag. And it's them, like, showing off what each other can do, mainly Peacemaker and Bloodsport, as they kind of sneak their way into this camp. Again, another subversion moment where it turns out, well, that probably actually was not the right course of action. But I liked it. I loved it. Set the tone of the movie. Like, it doesn't take itself seriously, but it as soon as you're willing to accept, like, we're not going to take any of this seriously. Yes, it's a real it's canon or whatever, and it's got all these characters, but everything in here is kind of ridiculous, and you're in for, like, a funny movie, right? Even though it's violent and whatever, it's fun. It's like Deadpool, where it's like, as long as you can get past the, okay, we're just going to do whatever is the funniest thing at the moment, that set it for me, where I was like, okay, I'm going to like this, because I love that whole section. And then when they found out, like, wait, oops, perhaps we shouldn't have destroyed everybody on the way into this camp. Loved it.
Yeah, because you have Peacemaker killing people with a blow dart, and yet King Shark eating people.
Yes. I thought the bar scene was one of the coolest scenes in the whole movie. I thought the bar scene, I'm going to give it, the bar scene is a dope scene because it showed the characters, kind of showed the relationship between Bloodsport and Rick Flag, which I also think gives us another side of Rick Flag that was not on display in the first Suicide Squad. And it also sets up Rick Flag's dad, which is interesting in and of itself, which is kind of the new Rick Flag Sr. storyline. I like that, and I definitely loved, I think they start the movie off extremely well with everyone getting slaughtered on the Corto Maltese beach. And they ended it just as nice with Weasel getting up and be like, and just runs away.
Yeah, I mean, both of the scenes that you all mentioned, I loved. So, I mean, I guess the other one that stood out was Harley Quinn's escape. Like, I just thought it was beautifully shot. The camera angles were very pointed, and you knew, kind of looking at it, exactly why each of the shots was lined up the way that it was. But it made it seem so seamless. Even with just the fight choreo, everything, when you look back at it, is on the beat to the music. So, like, I don't know if they did the score afterwards or if they did it before, but either way, they lined it up so that it was coming in shot for shot. Your strike was coming in when the music was crescendoing and things like that. So, yeah, that was a beautiful scene as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer and seeing there's all the sort of the flower petals bursting behind her. And, yeah. And I was saying to myself, like, I remember before seeing the movie, it's like, what is going to happen? Is she going to be fighting in a flower shop? Like, what's this all about? Ends up being, she's hallucinating. But but it's covering up all the blood of the scene.
She was thinking about me, and that's probably what I have. Margot Robbie.
Let's be real, yeah.
I mean, she was thinking about me, and I know that I create those kind of flower moments in people's lives, and she's probably having those thoughts. I understand. It's very difficult to get away from a beauteous man like myself. What? There it is right there, just so you know.
Perfect.
I also want to add real quick to that, to her escape, that whole story arc where, you know, she's in the first group and then she manages to escape, but she gets captured. And then the Presidente or whoever it is, like the ruler of this island, brings her over. And I thought from that point, I was like, okay, this is going to be a deal where like she's working with the enemy and then she eventually like joins the other team or whatever. But no, because it's Harley Quinn and she just does unexpected things. Like that whole switch was instant from, oh, okay, she's going to be, you know, mistakenly working with the enemy to just like, oh no, okay, got it. All right. So now she's public enemy number one again. Like I loved that whole buildup. I was worried it was going to go a different way. And again, subversion. They changed the entire of what I expected going into it. So that's excellent.
Oh, she was missing Dr. J. That's what was going on.
I think it was the opposite. She said, after my last relationship, I learned if anyone has a red flag, I just need to kill them.
And killing kids is a red flag.
But I also like the subversion of the fact that they go in to go rescue Harley, who's effectively the princess of that story, and she gets out on her own.
Do you want me to go back and start again? Yeah. I really appreciate you guys.
I can do it. Like, I swear. Oh, my God.
I got such a plan for this. We really thought this thing through, which I guess made her feel very special and made her feel like we were being cared about, which is phenomenal. The quiet undercharacter, I think we're all forgetting because no one has mentioned the one character who saved the day, Ratcatcher.
Before you get that, let's circle back, though. I want to say back to that scene we were talking about, though. I like the fact that Peacemaker is in this assassin spot, looking in the windows, getting ready, and he's like, I got my sights on the only person in the office, and it's like the secretary. He's like, somehow she's the threat. Well, that's like the way his brain works is everybody's got to die.
Everyone else has had flowers spurt out of them.
Now, how did Tahiti Waititi get into this movie? Out of curiosity, was he friends with James Gunn? Because he was Ratcatcher's dad. How did he get in there? How did he get a line of cameo story in there? Curious to know about that if anyone's got a Steelbook reference, Chris. But beyond that, Ratcatcher was the probably, if you think about the most powerful character, I think, you know, we poke it out, man. Obviously, I think if he had fully let go in all respects, people would be dead everywhere. But I also think from a perspective of just taking down Starro, it really was Ratcatcher, right? That device was something else, like a cosmic rod. It brought rats from everywhere.
If they didn't make a TV show with Peacemaker, that's the character I want to follow. I want to know everything about her. Like, give me the TV show of when she was a kid. Like, give me the entire prequel. Like, let me know, how does she end up in prison? Like, I want every single piece of information because she is so interesting. And we don't get told a lot about her either in the movie.
By the way, James Gunn has started to change that thought process for Suicide Squad. So I think he's getting better at it. His projects are showing better exposition because Creature Commandos, every episode gives you a background, enough of a background. Like, I know enough about Weasel now to know why he is the way he is. Like, I got a better understanding of where his thought and motivations go from however many of those things are. Besides kitty treats, I just know what he's really looking for on that. And so... that takes some development, but you're right. Ratcatcher, I'd like to know more about, because again, you know, and just that was beautifully shot choreography. That was beautifully shot. Even taking out Starro was beautifully shot. The whole idea of it and Harley jumping in and without giving too much away and the rats coming, that's beautifully shot.
It's funny you say, I was actually on a show yesterday and we were talking about Creature Commando, the show versus the Suicide Squad in general. We were talking about how, in the TV show, you have the time to really dive into those backstories, but you could not do that in a movie. I mean, this movie's already pretty long as it is, and we'll get the pacing in a bit.
Yes.
But to have done a deep dive into his backstory, I think he did it right. He hinted that there's a backstory. He hinted that there's these other elements are not, just a piece of paper. So I think James Gunn did a good job when it came to that, these backgrounds. I think if we had spent like 30 minutes on the Ratcatcher's backstory, I think we would have been tired of it. In fact, the fact that they hinted at there's a good one back there, and that is, I think she has a really interesting story. And yeah, right, a TV show would be fantastic to do a deep dive on her.
Yeah, I don't think this was the right movie to do it. I like they did it tastefully to where now I'm like, give me more. Like, I want to know more. So, yeah.
Exactly. You sort of got like a sample platter. Now, the one thing I didn't want to bring up for scenes, I liked every scene King Shark was in.
Nom noms?
Nom noms.
Nom noms.
Nom noms.
Can I eat nom noms? No, Nimue. Nom noms? No, nom noms.
And the scene I want to bring up particularly is the aquarium scene.
Yes.
Oh, it was so cute.
The little small fishies?
It was so adorable. Yeah, then attack him? Mad. Oh.
No, I think the running in circle scene when he's running up the circle and he's trying to make his little shark, that was the best scene. Those were some of them.
So much fun.
Or he makes the Peacemaker C4.
Yes.
and Peacemaker is offended that it looks the way it looks. I appreciate you doing that for me, but it does not look like me.
He's like, that is very nice, but no.
and this movie does an interesting job of going from like sort of a, I don't want to say grounded, but sort of a smaller story that actually ends up with a kaiju as the big bad guy at the very end of the movie. And it really ramps up to get to that point.
I think it builds up the things that are so ridiculous that by the time you get to Starro, you're like, okay. Like, it's huge and it's still bizarre, but it's not like the whole movie's straightforward, serious, and then Starro shows up, right? Like, that would have been too much.
The big thing with Starro is I didn't expect it to be that colorful.
I also think you have to, I think what they did extremely well was utilize the CG and the people who were representing his voice and to create almost a small amount of empathy. Mm-hmm. Did you guys not feel just a smidgen bit of empathy?
I felt a little bit bad for it. I was like, aw, this thing's just been trapped its entire life. Like, it didn't ask to be captured and then trapped.
For 60 years or something. Like, it was a long time he's
since
been
since the captured. Nazi era. Yeah, that's why it's called Yodnine.
So, like, 80 years, like, he's just like, I didn't ask for any of this. Like, I was just minding. And, like, at the end of the movie as well, when Starro's just like, I was minding my own business. Like, you're just like, Like, especially with that last line, it's like, like, yeah, you do feel a little bit of sympathy of, like, you really just wanted to leave. Like, you just didn't want to be stuck here.
You're absolutely right. And it was an interesting needle how they threaded the whole thing. So, I think bravo to James Gunn for that, because he threaded a needle on this movie that was really hard to do.
Well, I was about to say that James Gunn, that's what he does, is that the villains or the monsters in all his stories, he always tries to humanize them. And the true evil people in his worlds are always the humans. That's what he always paints. And I like his stuff, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that's just, he's gotten really good at it because that's what he does. Just like a Creature Commandos is a good example.
But I also think that what he does really well is he paints it where even the villains, per se, like Starro, it's not all black and white. Like, what I like about his movies is none of his characters are black and white. It's not, they are good, they always do good. It's like, no, they have demons in their closet. Like, you see it with Waller. Like, she's about to literally just be like, all right, my task is done. A city of millions can die. I don't care. Compared to even Bloodshot or Bloodsport. Bloodsport? This one's Bloodsport.
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 Welcome to our world.
But even with Bloodsport, like, when we're introduced to him, it's he's an assassin. He kills people. But then by the end of the entire time, he's like, I am a terrible person. I don't know why anyone wants to be associated with me. But then at the end, it's like, I can't let millions die when I know that I can help.
And then he had a smaller bullet. For Peacemaker's bullet. He bullet at Peacemaker's bullet, which sets up Peacemaker.
Yeah.
It's so funny, Jack. That's a tie back to the whole, like, you know, my bullets are so small, they'll go through your bullet holes without touching the sides. Come to find out, no, his bullets aren't smaller. They are bigger.
Yeah. And it was like, you can't hit the center when it's already the center. It's like, I'll hit the center.
their back and forth is hilarious. But this movie comes in over 2 hours long. How do you guys feel about the pacing of it?
Oh, you don't notice it. Once you watch it, you don't know. I mean, here's one of those movies, I'll tell you, once you've seen it the first time, you could put it on mute and watch it and almost know the lines. Even to us slightly middle-aged, little bit older individuals on this podcast, we could put it onto mute and be like, I know exactly what they're saying right now. I feel good about myself.
Yeah, I was worried when I started it and saw that it was over 2 hours long. I was like, oh no, what? This is going to be another one I have to watch in segments. And I don't have time. I watched it right before this taping. So I was like, well, let's see. But it flew by. I think because you have an ensemble cast and they did have to do a little bit of explaining on some of the characters, I like that they didn't waste time You know, introducing us to Harley Quinn again. You don't need it. In fact, they're like, oh, and her, and she's there. And don't even bother introducing her by name. You just know who it is. And it's like, okay. And, you know, the little bit of background they did was just enough to like, here's what their powers are. You don't need to quite know why they have it. Who cares? They'll get into it throughout the story. It's there. It's blended very well, but it also meant that, you know, I wasn't wading through a whole bunch of weird flashbacks and a whole bunch of things other movies like this would do, or have like the scene with Harley that I mentioned where it's her and the leader of the nation on a date, more or less, is so fast. And so it moves along fast enough. They didn't have a half an hour where it builds that up, where other
like
movies
like a high school prom date. It's in and out. It's done and done. It's a high school prom date.
They literally went from first date to marriage in 6 hours.
Yeah. And but in like 5 minutes, I didn't have to watch 30 minutes of this romance to get to where that happened. It didn't need it. And I think, like, we just did Punisher a while ago, and I think that has that problem where to try to get his backstory, you have 45 minutes that it should have been whittled down to 10. This doesn't
well,
have anything like that.
The Russian was such a well-developed fight scene.
Oh, boy. No, the guy was no background. Opinions. Yeah, he was the opposite. They did no background for the Russian. Like, yeah, we hired the Russian. And then he shows up, and he looks ridiculous. You know what? I'm not talking about the Russian anymore.
Here's a fun fact. The Russian was in Wolverine and Deadpool. Did you guys know that?
Yes,
he was one of the bad guys. Yes, he was. He was a completely different guy, but he was so important, he got pulled in the void.
But real fast, Jerry, it's funny. I actually got sent pictures of the Russian from the comic book by people who listen to the show saying, look, that's how he's supposed to look.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous in the comic book. It's ridiculous in the movie.
Yeah, I have no idea if these characters are dressed like they are in the comic book or not in this movie. Like, I have, because I have no reference. I know of the characters, some of them, but I haven't read the comic, so I have no idea if the costumes are accurate.
Well, that's the nice thing about this level of character. Most people don't have a clue who they are. No, they're pulled from the bottom of the barrel, like the Javelin. He's a real character, I hear, but if you asked me to describe him, I would describe him from this movie. Because I have never heard of him.
I looked at the polka dot to see if they made him up for this movie or not. They didn't. He's some old Batman villain, but like a 50s, 60s Batman villain, right? So it's not like he's going to be in a current issue of something where you're like, oh, he's super damaging. He was like an older villain they brought back for this purpose.
Right. That makes me sad that the shark guy, Nimue. That makes me sad that Nimue is not a bigger character because he's incredible.
Well, Nimue is in Creature Commandos, if that doesn't ruin anything. Nimue is not done in his career with DC because he is just too fun a character.
He's introduced in the last episode of that series, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that DC is doing a bit of a better job than Marvel did when it comes to bringing monsters out, because while I enjoyed Werewolf by Night, and I thought they had some really interesting takes on that, I just think the whole concept of how they covered the Bride of Frankenstein, the monsters, I just think it's kind of dope, man.
So, but back to the pacing, how'd you guys find the pacing for it?
Not too bad. You could watch it. You could watch it once and just kind of put it on mute and be like, this is a fun movie to have in the background.
I watched it. I enjoyed it. I think if I sit down thinking that I'm just watching this for entertainment and nothing else, then the pacing's perfectly fine. And then, yeah, I mean, even when I sat down and watched it and I was like, I need to semi-analyze this movie to be able to have a discussion. Even then, I was like, I only found myself at one point being like, wow, this is getting long. And then I got up, got some water, sat back down, and then we were good. Like, it was just something like that. So, yeah.
I had a similar experience. I had to stop. I've seen this movie, obviously, before. I watched it again this morning. And I had to stop it halfway through to take care of something. And when you pause it, the time remaining pops up on the screen, and they were just going into the tower, and it said 45 minutes left. And I'm like, I've seen this. How is there 45 minutes left of this movie? But that last 45 flies by. Like, the moment I hit play again, it just cruised.
Yeah, that's roughly where I hit pause as well, that general time frame.
Yeah, there's not really a lull in the movie, right? No. Even like, I'd say that the bar scene is not boring by any means, but that's where I paused it to go get some other stuff, because I was like, okay, this is kind of like they're relaxing. It's a fun moment for a moment. I know there's a plan here, but still, I'll come back in a minute. And I was only gone for a few minutes, came back. That's the only time I paused it. And yeah, that's only because I need to get a drink and go to the bathroom.
Exactly. That's what all I did. Like, I got up, got a drink, and I was like, all right, cool. Sit back down, watch this movie.
One thing I did want to talk about, guys, is the soundtrack of this movie.
Obviously, clearly I've seen this movie hundreds of times, and the soundtrack hasn't stood out to me. There are movies where soundtracks stand out, but the best I can say is it compliments the movie. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not You Got the Touch or Dare. You know, so I mean, if I or you know, the iconic Lost Boys, Believe with the sax, right? I'm trying to replay that my whole life. I want to get the long, oaky, breaky hair and but I can't do that. So we're okay. It didn't happen for me. But, you know, this soundtrack just flows along nicely.
I agree. I think it complements the movie, but it's not winning any awards.
Also, I think it's a mix of old and new. That's the problem with some of these is like, whatever they do is the new music at the time. So when you watch it later, it's dated. You know, all these movies that we watched that had like new metal soundtracks for, you know, Daredevil or whatever. Like all those things, or no, Elektra had the one that was like Evanescence over and over again. That's fine, but it puts you in a moment. It puts you in a specific moment.
This Evanescence in general puts you in a moment. I mean, Evanescence make you have to question your life choices in about 15 minutes.
I mean, for me personally, I'm like, if there's a way, if I'm creating something, is there a way for you to write it yourself? Is my first thought of like, can you get someone to help you write it? Or use something where it isn't set of like, oh, you can tell that this movie came out in 2021 because of this song. So I'll always use things from like, I would lean of like, hey, use something from like 2015, 2010. Like use something that was already out, but isn't coming out like that year. It's not the hip thing that year, but still fits your vibe. Because I guarantee you can find something. You just got to go back a bit.
I really thought you were going to go like, I pull from the way back, like the 90s.
Sometimes I do. And I love pulling from the 80s and the 70s. Wow. Like the majority of what I listen to is 70s and 80s rock.
You gotta be careful on that self-confidence tip right there, because we are old. I don't know.
No.
Three of us are like one, and one of us is not. So it does,
the first song you hear is Johnny Cash. That's older than all of us, right? So that's fine.
That's older than all of us. Yeah, that is definitely.
But then, the issue is when you start doing that new stuff, and I'm like, like now I'm going to know that, like, or I'm just going to have that feeling every time if I go back and watch
it. Yeah, like the movie Daredevil, when we watched Daredevil, like the Evanescence songs that were in it had dropped the month before the movie came out. I mean, it was about as new as you get, and it taints it in the fact that that's all you think about when you see that show. You hear that music player, like, this movie came out in that year, that's it.
And that's all I'm saying is, like, don't do that.
No, James Gunn is going to have that's probably, if you ask me what this man's weakness is, after watching Creature Commandos, is, okay, and I'm going to say this with all due respect because I think he's done a great job. So the movie Elizabethtown was about the music, right? The movie when they did the Rolling Stone tune, that was about where they followed the reporter. That was about the music. That was central to telling the story. Even Dune or Superman, John Williams soundtrack, that's about complementing the story as much as it is creating it. Otherwise, music should just be background and set moods. And I think James Gunn can get a really, he's very much an all over the place music guy. And I think it could take away from some of the things he's currently doing. Like, that's the only drawback of Creature Commandos, is the music is a little off.
I will strongly disagree with you on that one. In fact, Creature Commandos, I love the soundtrack from that. That the music is so eclectic. It hits so many different points on it. And it only comes in hard when the show's over, when it's the closing credits. And it definitely summarizes how I felt going through that episode. I think he does a great job, or whoever he does it for him does a great job of selecting songs, especially Creature Commando. I love whoever selects his music does a great job, because I've never heard those songs before, and they're all bangers. They're all great.
They're all bangers. That may just be the fact that you are older. Now, you were probably back in the first punk days, weren't you there?
Yeah, I've got my walker.
I don't even
know
when that came out.
I usually use my walker to get up the stairs.
I understand, Chris. I get it.
So let's switch to the effects real fast. How do you guys feel about the special effects around this movie, given it's only been out for a couple years now?
They've changed. They're better now. They're really better, but here's what makes it better. You also clearly see where they don't spend money. When they're as good as they are, and they are very good, you can clearly see where they don't spend money. And I think that's the problem with them. Better effects get when someone does something where they, you know, where they run out of money, for lack of a better word. You can see where they're shaving the budget.
See, I think they still hold up pretty well. For it's a comic book movie. It's fairly unrealistic. You have Starro going on, but the fact that Starro's there and doesn't look like a bizarre cartoon in the middle of the world, because everything else up to that point has been increasingly, you know, unbelievable, but they kind of fold you in, right? You get to fold it in on Polka Dot Man's powers. You get folded in on everything else. And when you finally get to Starro, you're like, well, let's see how it looks. And it doesn't look half bad. I thought it was funny, though, that this movie has this giant star monster. And then, you know, Watchmen, which was admittedly an older movie, But the original comic book ending of Watchmen is much more similar to this giant Starro attack. It's not, but graphically, visually, it would look the same. And instead, they're like, that would be unfilmable and ridiculous. We're going to change it. Where they, instead, they just went full bore in this one. Like, we're going to make it as ridiculous as possible. And it still somehow really worked. And I'm sure that's a difference of time, but also the fact that up until the end of Watchmen, it was not that ridiculous. And then that would have been way out there. Where in this case, again, you've got everything building up to how ridiculous this giant starfish would be. And it works. It works. It looks fine.
Yeah, I think that they held up. I never felt at any point where it was like, ooh, that's bad CGI. So
James Gunn's career started in horror. Can you see those roots in this movie?
Oh, yeah. In the essence, you have a starfish taking over people and killing them. That is terrifying.
Well, and also some of the, like, even the first scene where you see the other group come on and get attacked. Like, those are very violent, bloody, graphic deaths. But in a completely horror way, so good. But even all the scenes in the lab where they show, like, all the experiments they've been doing on the people that have the starfish.
Yeah.
You know, kind of invasion on them or whatever you want to call it, like a starfish attack. Like, you see the part where he pulled the face off, and so there's, like, the starfish-shaped face cut out of the sky. Like, those are all really good horror effects. I can totally see that background there.
And I don't think the effects are bad. I don't think the effects are bad. I just think that, you know, quite frankly, great effects like what they put in these movies, and that's why I think the expectation is so high for Superman, because the way they shot Superman flying, they had to overcome how Zack Snyder did Man of Steel. And it was not, you know, so they took everything Zack Snyder did, and then James Gunn added about 19 different new things to it to get it more personal, get it more in your face. The better the effects they go, and that's the problem with these movies when they have to be such big winners so fast, because they can't really, you know, I mean, the better they get, the worse they can become if you run out of money, as comparison to.
True. And James Gunn's favorite scene in that, favorite shot, was when King Shark rips a guy in half.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
When you saw that, you're like, yeah, that's his horror roots, just screaming out right now.
Yep.
So, guys, we're coming near the end of this, but what were some that you sort of really loved about this movie, but what do you think they could have done better?
No, I think the movie is great. I like the movie. I think the movie did really well. I don't have any complaints on this movie. I think seeing who comes out of the movie, like seeing which characters are kind of surviving, is an interesting story in and of itself, right? Because, now we've got like three characters. We've got Nimue, we've got Weasel. I still don't get Weasel. Like, I get Weasel as a thing, but I'm trying to figure out what the enduring quality of Weasel is, because he does lick his own balls. And I mean, unless somehow that has become an in vogue thing that we somehow all wish to aspire to.
Yeah, expecting nothing going into this, I quite like this.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I went into it thinking this is going to be bonkers, and I left thinking that was bonkers. So, yeah.
Fergal, you've alluded this a couple times about how Creature Commando, which is Task Force M, and this is Task Force X, and I'm not sure if you guys have seen that show or not, but between the two, what are the connections that you see between them?
So, Task Force M, okay, is a direct result of, in essence, the Sokovia Accords against Task Force X, which is a direct result of Cordo Maltese, which is a direct result of Peacemaker, which is a direct result of Amanda Waller's family. So, I mean, it's all draw. And then, which is a direct result of Rick Flagg Sr. being the leader of Task Force M.
So this movie is actually, could be considered the beginning of the new DCU, sort of?
In a way, because they're not drawing it. So that's the only major difference between these two lines. And this is what James has decided on. They're not drawing a story like Marvel is. They're telling a comic book. And then within that comic book, they have chapters. And then they also have one-shots in those comic books, which are all the Elseworld movies.
So they're just building it in a different way than
much
Marvel
different
is.
Way. Yeah, they're operating each chapter as a chapter. And I don't think they yet have defined themselves as uniting against a singular global multiversal threat. Right, I think Marvel is going to say, oh, we got some really good ones. They're all multiversal threats at this point. And they've actually been setting those guys up for now almost a year. Everything from Venom to, you know, the one-eyed thing and Shavagarath and you know, just they keep building up to these things. But DC hasn't yet, I don't think they've come to a point, because at this point, they're not telling origin stories. They've got to tell compelling stories. So the most compelling, I think they've settled on a writer, Grant Morrison. So a lot of their stuff is going to fall under. If you're a DC fan and you want to kind of get a sense of where you're at anytime in the movie stream, you got to go hunt out Grant Morrison's work. Frank Quitely, Grant Morrison, you've got to hunt these guys out because you'll. All-Star Superman, in my viewpoint, is one of the best stories ever written. It's a great story. It's a great story, even more expertly drawn. Frank Quitely, you know, Grant Morrison. And Grant Morrison's written Swamp Thing. He's written Sandman. I put him at the same quality as Alan Moore and other folks of that nature. You can put it together, but they've decided on a strategy. They're sticking with it. It's going to come across different. But at least James Gunn took that continuity with him. So he's kind of, nothing's disconnected. It's all one property.
Yeah, because James Gunn did this movie, did Peacemaker as well, and now he's leading it up and he doesn't want those projects to die. And what he has said is that if it's mentioned in Creature Commandos going forward, it's canon. So in episode one of Creature Commandos, he mentions Operation Starfish. They mention Peacemaker. So that means these two things are part of canon, but it doesn't mean everything in them is canon. And it's like a good comic book where essentially it might reference something from another run or it might not reference a thing from another run. So it only matters if it's referenced. That's essentially the take he's taking with it. So he doesn't have to throw everything out. And keep the things he likes, which happens to be all the things he did. So my question for you guys is, should people go out and find this movie if they haven't seen it before?
I was going to say, yeah, I think it's well worth finding as a standalone. Again, you don't need a lot of background in the world of DC universe to enjoy this. And in fact, even if you were very familiar with a lot of those characters, there's still a bunch here you won't know. So I think it's a good one-off. But I'm also excited to see what else they do with some of these characters.
Yeah, I think it is a good one, both from the perspective of you know these characters or you don't know these characters. I don't feel like you have to know these characters to enjoy this movie. And then secondly, even if, you know, people might not enjoy comic book movies as much, if they are looking for something that's just a fun action movie, I think it's a fun action movie and you can just accept that they're in a world with superpowers, but it doesn't force you to worry about an entire world. Like, you don't need to be sucked in. Like, it's not like an Avengers film where you have 12 different pieces coming together into play, whereas it's a lovely one shot. So I think it works in multiple different ways to watch it.
I actually think this is gonna, you know, the whole thing about where James Gunn, and I was one of the first people questioning Peter Safran and James Gunn, right? When you had Jeff Goff, if I'm not mistaken, who came from the same world as Kevin Feige, reinvented the DC with the 52. I might be saying, is it Jeff or James Gunn, but it's Goff is his last name, like my quarterback that effed up at the football game. But no, Jeff Johns, excuse me. I'm sorry. I just took myself out of that negative period. I want to bring positive energy all for Jaden Daniels. But I just think that he's done some interesting things with this role. And I don't know about you, but you mentioned, Chris, that you like music in Creature Commandos. Like, you thought it was all bangers. So I'm going to tell you, I thought the guitar solo of John Williams for the trailer of Superman, that was a banger. That was an absolute monster banger. Does anyone else disagree with that?
Anyone else disagree with that? I agree with it, but I don't disagree with it.
I agree with it.
Yeah, but it's a guitar version of a theme you already knew. It's not a new theme. It's a callback to a theme that you know. You've learned it your entire life. You know that theme is Superman.
But it's a reinvention. Oh, right. Which is not a callback.
Well, I think it was a good way to sort of make the, get the nostalgia going. It's kind of like when we reviewed Superman as well, right? Like, you went into it thinking, like, I remember this movie being amazing. And then you go back to it, you're like, it's not so amazing. The second one,
but it's hard. I think then Superman, and then we just did the 1966 Batman. It's hard to talk about those movies in any way constructively. I don't know. Like, they're fun, and I've watched them my entire life. They're things that I've seen forever. It's hard to go in and really criticize those movies, because they are so different in a time frame than this movie, for example, right? You couldn't say the effects on either Batman from 1970 or Superman from 1978 or Batman from 1966 was on the same even universe as what was in this movie. And it doesn't make sense to discuss them kind of in the same tone.
So before we rate this movie, for those who are listening right now, if you can go to Apple or Spotify, just go leave us a 5-star review and review. That'd be great. Great way to support the show and help other listeners find us. But for this movie, guys, how would you rate this movie?
I'll give it about a half a thumb. Well, no. I'm going to say I'll give it 3/4 of a thumb. I will never, you know, I'm going to hold my full thumb, but I'll give it 3/4 of a thumb with the threat of blowing your head off if you don't agree with me. Ah, with my little detonation device.
Well, now I'm being threatened, so I guess I have to give it a 3/4 of a thumb. I don't need that head to explode.
That's great. Thank you for playing the straight man to that statement. That was phenomenal.
I got your back. No, but I agree. I would probably give it about 3/4 of a thumb. Like when I was thinking of it on like a scale of like 1 to 10, it was kind of like a 7, 7.5-ish. Like very enjoyable film. I don't know if you could get a lot more. I don't know if you can really get a much higher rating with the type of film that it is, just for me personally. But like it's a very solid film. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd say for me personally, it's a huge thumb up. But I think if I was going to recommend this to somebody as like, oh, here's some superhero movies you need to see, it's probably in that 3/4 thumb range. Because I think because it doesn't take itself seriously, it is very tongue-in-cheek. There is a lot of a lot more humor than you'd get in a lot of these superhero movies, right? If this was the same theme that Batman had through the whole way through, it would feel weird, right? It wouldn't make any sense. So I'm going to also go with a 3/4 thumb. But for me personally, this may be one of my favorites we've looked at.
Yeah, I was going to give this thing 1-star arm up. I would even have my head blown off by Fergal. I'd say it's a fun action flick. Even if you aren't into superheroes, go watch, you'll have a good time. I don't think you could come out of this movie saying like I wasted 2 hours of my life, unless of course you're just adamant against action movies.
Chris, I just wanted you to know I do have the device at hand. Wanted to be clear that.
Well, one thing really we learned, Fergal, your internet connection is the most unstable we've ever seen, so I doubt it even go through.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I do enjoy, Chris, though, that you created a new way of ranking your movies and that it's now Starro Arms. And I would like to think that from now on, when you rate movies, you're just going to be slowly like drawing Starro Arms for each one.
Yeah, how many Starro Arms is this movie worth out of 5?
Does it get to be the full Starro or no?
So before we finish up, guys, I do have a new review just came in. And I just want to make sure you guys heard this one. And don't worry, Fergal, this one's not a personal attack like the last one.
Oh, I love them all. Bring them. Bring the love. There's more fun in the anger than there is in the happy. But I love the happy.
So this one's 5 stars for us. The Movie Smash crew does a great job discussing films and their love of them. There's a great balance between the personal preferences, objective reviewing, and trivia regarding the films. This show is enjoyable and fun for any fan. Good times and good info. I kind of wish it was a little more insulting, but you're right.
I mean, yeah.
That's no, don't say nice. That. Sweet. You wish it were going to get nothing but hate mail.
True. If you're going to leave a review on Apple or Spotify, make sure it's only 5 stars. We only accept 5 stars over there. But if you want to send me a note that's kind of hateful, that's different.
That's fair.
Yeah, keep that secret.
What if it's 5 stars, but then a hateful comment?
I'll still take that, because the 5 stars, okay, all the algorithm cares about.
Nice. These guys.
Just give... Look. Just giving the people the options.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't do the other thing. I've gotten a 1-star review on Retrovaniacs, but was like, I love the show. 1-star. Like, no, what are you doing? You're killing me.
What are you doing? That's not how this works.
There's a show I used to listen to where they came out and said, we want to be the most 4-star rated podcast out there. They want all their fans to give 4 stars. So they thought it was hilarious. But after a year, they literally only had 4 stars. And they realized they were just getting killed by the algorithm. So they were killed by their own joke. But Nick, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find my stuff. My website is usually up to date. It's Ankit, A-N-K-I-T, Madeira, MADHIRA.com. And that has information to everything when this comes out. I have a new single coming out on Valentine's Day, so that'll be coming out.
Musician single? The
same name. Yeah, I'm a singer and a songwriter, and I sing and I write music.
What kind of singing do you do?
It's mainly like indie pop, indie rock kind of vibe.
Not like a Michael Bublé type situation.
Sometimes. See, the fun thing about being an actor, I can do all of it. But when I write personally, it's like indie pop, indie rock a lot of times. A lot of electric guitar, bass, a lot of bass.
Well, I'm just jealous because I can't do that. I bought my son a guitar when he was 9 because he had this desire to be a guitar. And it's been in his closet because we packed it away because he didn't want to use it for now almost 8 years. It's actually only ever been used once. Now we have a brand new guitar. In case anyone wants one of those, more than worth. That's if
that is a dated
guitars.
Song. Well done. That is a dated song.
I know, for a guy who hates feeling old, I mean.
Well, for some reason, that song just rattled around my brain. It was the only thing I could draw to the mat at this point.
I really want to hear your rendition of Evanescence.
Oh, fair enough.
Then you'd have to start seeing me cry and have a bottle of liquor next to me, because that's the only way I could accurately portray Evanescence. Or Sinead O'Connor.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I got those, and then I also have two podcasts. I host one, which is called Post Finale, which is a film review podcast, and it follows my journey watching popular films for the first time as an actor who has seen nothing. So as this episode comes out, we'll actually be going through, and it usually takes me about a month on that show to get through an entire movie, but we are working our way through The Notebook in the month of February. As of recording this, I'm halfway through, and oh boy, I can't wait to watch the second half of it. But the other show that I do is called Flip the Scripts, and that one is with my friend who is a director, and we take a look at adaptations, so books to movies, books to TV shows. How did they do? Do we think that it is a faithful adaptation? What could they have done better? Similar to this, but more on the adaptation side of things. Looking at that, we haven't yet hit the comics yet, though. And we will soon. And you can also find me on Instagram, ANKIT_M_official. But yeah, that's where you can find all of the different things that I do.
And Jeremy, how do we ever find you?
You can always find me here every 2 weeks, but otherwise on Retrovania.net, where our podcast and video channel and YouTube and Twitch streams, etc. Or at subtastics.bandcamp.com for 90s alt rock sort of more or less thing that I still do.
And Fergal.
Well, you can bring me back to life, as they say in Evanescence, or you can find me at my house just barely trying to survive the day as it attacks me every moment that I wake up. Or you can survive me at my job where I have a boss who really wants to make my life like living hell. Or if you really want to find me, you can find me at Get Your Nerd On, where I really love to get my nerd on, where I will eventually simply live in the world of nerddom. And picking up amazing little buys. By the way, I did just pick up an amazing comic recently, if you guys haven't caught up, there's a comic series called Secret War. Not Secret Wars, not to be confused with that theory, but it's a 5-issue arc about based in a real life CIA black hit overthrow a government type situation, but with Marvel characters.
And for me, you can always find me over All Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture over there. I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us. And if you think by adding the word "the" to the title makes this a reboot or a sequel, just reach out to us, send us a note, or movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
But when you get past that certain age, you'll lose track and then you'll just need to go pee somewhere.